your story is so powerful. And that's why I can't wait to be able to share this with others. So before you got sick, what was your attitude towards your health?
I was still concerned about my health, but my digestive health, I was eating too much junk. When you get older, you gotta watch that stuff. At times, I was having some just, you know, explosive gas, which I was saying, geez, this doesn't seem right. I was just brushing it off instead of addressing it head on. You don't want to talk about that stuff to a doctor or anybody. So I kind of brushed it off. In the colonoscopy, I knew I had to have one. Yeah, I put it off for 10 years, which was stupid because I had all those polyps that they removed. Thankfully, I did that. So I guess I was in like a maintenance mode that was not taken to the serious level that it should have been. I was just working out, so I'm okay. But I wasn't putting the whole picture together and really understanding the value of your health the way I do now. Obviously, I mean, anyone would probably say that if they healed themselves through a process, regardless of what it was. But it woke me up to being thankful to be alive and being thankful if I can help someone else. Being thankful that I can do what I need to do. Just being thankful that I have a family that supports me. Mm-hmm. Thankful that my previous neglect of certain issues are under control now. And a respect for karma and a respect for a higher being mm-hmm. that guides me. I was spiritual, but just to a very minimal effect.
Yeah.
I'm much more spiritual now.
God whispers or he shouts.
Right.
He gave me a
rude awakening, and I needed it. I have a much better understanding of my digestive health now than I did before.
I bet you can see how, because you have an illness, you learn about how the GI tract works and how essential it is. If that's not functioning, nothing else is going to function right.
Digestive issues are debilitating in that they're totally underestimated by somebody who doesn't deal with them. They don't understand. Unless you go through it yourself, you'll just say to someone, yeah, oh, that's too bad and everything. Oh, they'll be okay. You know, they're just a hypochondriac. No, it doesn't work
that
way.
When you started getting the symptoms, you had the explosive gas.
Yeah.
How long did you wait before it started to escalate and became a major
2 years. I was having it for 2 years.
Yes.
But it wasn't every single day. I had loose stools coming out. It didn't look right. Not diarrhea, but just loose stools. That's not healthy. Based on what I do now, I can see the discrepancy was huge. I think I had bacteria overgrowth causing that, but it was in check a lot more than it was when I ended up finally ripping the fissure open and then having the surgery. Then it got really bad. So I think I had SIBO, but I didn't just know that something wasn't right. And then I think, well, you have hemorrhoids, so maybe it's just, this is your hemorrhoids. And as an anal fissure is often misdiagnosed as hemorrhoids, it's completely different.
And how long did you have hemorrhoids for?
I did a lot of heavy squats and stuff. In my last colonoscopy 10 years ago, it was noted that I had diverticulitis and hemorrhoids. I could get sore from time to time there, and I just always attributed it to that. Whether there was a small tear, I don't know. But when this all started, January of 2 years ago, I was running on the treadmill and all of a sudden I started having a pain in my rear end. This is hemorrhoids, I said, all right. I had to stop after about a mile and a half because this is starting to get a little bad. I wonder what it is. And then I said, well, I'm going down the Cape. It was like a Friday. By the time I got down the Cape, it was sore. I sat on ice in the house for a while, and I attributed the whole thing to hemorrhoids.
Was it a sharp pain? Was it a dull ache?
A dull ache. So I did my thing all weekend. I didn't notice much, but then I drove home, and it started to really hurt again. This must be my hemorrhoids. I got home, and then I had a large bowel movement the next morning, and then I just felt something in there rip apart. I felt like I was going to the bathroom, excreting out shreds of glass. I tried to drive after that, and I couldn't. I must have had an anal fissure that was started. I could feel like going a real long rip. And then that's how the whole thing started. So I went to one of those emergency health places, and we probably have hemorrhoids. So I got some medicine for hemorrhoids. It did absolutely nothing. My primary care physician thought I had a fissure. You know, so he made me an appointment with a GI doctor. Then I got a call and they said, we looked at your chart. We don't think we can help you, but we think you should go see a colorectal surgeon to help you, which was not the right call at all. But anyways, that's how it happens. When COVID started to subside, the hairdresser was open. This is before I got my surgery, and I drove there, and then it was absolutely the worst drive I've ever had. I mean, I had to stop, pull over, stand up, and the pain was severe. I couldn't even go through with the haircut. So got to the point where I had to stay very close to home. Then my stomach was starting to get screwed up, and it just felt like, you know, something's really wrong with me. You know, I would go home and I would sleep a lot during the day. I still tried doing my workouts. And I didn't do things like that. I felt put pressure on it and felt I stopped. And I just do things that I thought were okay.
Every time you had a bowel movement, it must have been a dread.
It was a dread, but it was a little painful. There'd be blood, but the real pain came in like an hour later. This doctor wanted me on the fiber. In itself, I was worried it doesn't have more bowel movements taking fiber. So I tried to manage only having one bowel movement a day, because if I had two, forget about it. The second one would hurt right away. The first one in the morning would, you know, the primary one would hurt. It wasn't until like an hour later where I had to go back to bed and just, even if I was going to work out that day, I had to sleep. You know, I was living on gabapentin, which was great for the tooth. I mean, it didn't help the anal fissure per se, but it helped me be able to sleep. Even though I had the pain, I could sleep.
When did the tooth start?
The tooth started before the surgery. I didn't think I was going to need a root canal. I thought I needed a new crown. Mm-hmm. Because he pulled one of my wisdom teeth out, and then that started to hurt afterwards. But then it went away, and then it started coming back. But when you take gabapentin, you don't even feel a tooth. When I was asked, do you need a root canal? And I said, no, I don't think so. Because they won't do the surgery on you if you need a root canal. Because your immune system is already compromised. Then after it went full blown, I mean, I had to just manage it because the surgery was postponed. You know, I was using the Halon ointment. I'd have like some good afternoons. It wasn't the greatest. You know, if I sat for a long time, forget it. It would hurt. And then, of course, the diarrhea started. I had to take antibiotics because after the surgery and I stopped taking the gabapentin, this tooth got really bad. I had the emergency root canal, and then I had to take antibiotics for that. I don't know if it was a direct result of the antibiotics or whatnot, but then my SIBO was, that really blew it out of control. But I noticed after my surgery, I'd take baths. And I'd hear my stomach making all noises. That wasn't happening to me before the surgery. Mm-hmm. So that's when I noticed that something was kind of, you know, I called the nurse and you're just hungry. You need to eat. Going to see Dr. Dowd. When I was having all the diarrhea every day, and Heidi made me the appointment with him. And then I got the doctor on demand.
Yes.
And I spoke with a psychiatrist. He wanted me to go on anti-anxiety medication. Mm-hmm. I said, look, I got to take this. I said, it doesn't matter. If it screws up my bowel movements, then well, I'll deal with it then. But if I don't go on this is just spiraling out of control here. So that was the big turning point, was seeing Dr. Dowd and then getting myself on the Zoloft. And Dr. Dowd was very happy that I did that.
What did the surgery involve then? What did you have to do and what was the recovery?
Well, the surgery was, twofold for me. He also found that I had a fistula in there. So we cut the fistula all the way down so it opened it up so it would heal from the outside in and not have, that had got a tunnel in there. Mm-hmm. And then he cut my sphincter muscle to relax it so the fissure would get a chance to heal, because the sphincter muscle is very tight. Mm-hmm. And it won't let blood come in when you have an anal fissure to heal it. So that's why, you know, with nifedipine, which is a calcium channel blocker, you put that on, and what it does is it has blood rush into the area, and it relaxes, it draws blood in and relaxes the sphincter muscle. But the problem was I wasn't on a strong enough dose. Dr. Dowd, who I greatly admire, he thought he knew my personality well because his wife had anxiety, and he thought I was a very anxious type of person, and he thought I was causing the diarrhea by my anxiety. But I knew that I wasn't doing that. I had to have my stools examined for C. diff, I think it's called, and and C-reactive protein, which is a monitor for high inflammation, mm-hmm. which could be, you know, cancer-related if it is. Mm-hmm. And then he also checked out a bunch of other things, and he had me do a celiac test, if I'm mm-hmm. saying that correct, and a gluten test. So then I went back to see him, and everything was okay. And he said, well, this, you know, he thought it was anxiety. I said, well, I did some research on SIBO, and I found a few individuals who have the same exact symptoms as me on the SIBO board. He says, oh, I don't think it's SIBO. You know, are you getting bloated? And I said, well, I don't know. I don't feel like I'm getting bloated, but I'm certainly experiencing the stomach turbulence and the gas that I never dealt with before. He, you know, was pretty sure I didn't have SIBO, but he said, look, if you really want to do it, we'll do it. I said, I really want to do it. So he wasn't against me taking it. He supported me taking it, but he really didn't think I had it. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, I get the call from his assistant, you know, after I took the test a couple weeks later, you have SIBO. You have it pretty good. That's when I got prescribed the Xifaxan, and then herbs I was taking. But I noticed that the best thing, just by my own research went for me, is Saccharomyces boulardii. You get that in Florastar, but there's cheaper versions of Florastar made by reputable companies that are highly effective, and I'm staying on that now. You know, I had to change my diet, and I finally knew what was wrong with me now, because I knew, you know, I remember getting groceries after the surgery and stuff and saying, oh, this is still not right, and your stomach doesn't feel good on mm-hmm. top of it, and yet you just feel sick.
Yeah.
You know, and like I get up in the morning and, you know, brushing my teeth, and I had that like feeling I wanted to throw up for a long time. Dr. Dow recommended that I get a second opinion. Okay. So I saw this guy, and, you know, he's reading all the notes from the other guy, and I'm saying, yeah, you really can't pay attention to this. I read the notes after him going, what does he think I'm doing? You know, everything's great. He's doing great, doing great. But at times, he's experiencing gas. That's it. You can't read that. So the other colorectal surgeon was a lot older, a lot more experienced. And Dr. Dodd, when he did his colonoscopy, gave me some hope. He says, it looks like it's trying to heal. Mm-hmm. It looks like it's trying to heal. And when the other colorectal surgeon, you know, looked in there, he says, it doesn't look chronic, which is good. So I said, all right, that's good. Then he prescribed me 2% nifedipine, mm-hmm. not 0.2, 2%. And, well, Dowd also gave me another prescription, too, before, at the first meeting with him. And that kind of screwed my mind up a little. Like, when I get up fast and want, you know, I'm like, whoa. The other doctor, the colorectal surgeon, recommended I go back on nifedipine. But he gave me the right, you know, he gave me the 2%. I asked the previous colorectal surgeon to increase, when I saw him again, post-surgery, and he went in there, and like, oh, you still have a fissure. You know, and so he goes, I'm sorry. And then he said, you can keep taking the nifedipine. I said, well, how about giving me a stronger nifedipine prescription? Oh, no, that'll blow your head off. And all right, well, whatever. So I refilled one of his, but I wasn't getting anything from it, really. And he wanted to do surgery again. And I said, we'll hold off on that. I went and saw the other guy, and he gave me the 2%, which didn't heal it right away. He gave me 3 refills. So it took me 4 months. I had to take every single refill. And at the end, in the middle of my third refill, which was my fourth tube, I started to feel like it was healing.
Because I remember all of a sudden, you thought you were on the road to healing, and then there was a pool of blood that came out,
right.
So you were really nervous.
Right, I was. Because I was still bleeding. I'd have diarrhea. I went to see the acupuncturist, and that just made my diarrhea worse. So I know that wasn't the right road for me.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I finished an acupuncture treatment, I would get sore, and I'd have diarrhea. So it wasn't helping me at all. So that wasn't working. Yeah, I was bleeding, you know, with the diarrhea. I was bleeding every single morning after the surgery. It just never stopped. You know, I felt like I was in the middle of the third refill, and I remember, you know, I'm starting to feel better. I'm going, all right, I think this is starting to finally heal. You know, I was able to drive more, and this is great. You know, I always drove with one of those memory foams underneath me, which thankfully I don't have anymore. Then I had one morning, I went to the bathroom, and I had a torrential downpour of blood. I took a sitz bath afterwards, and the whole thing was red. I said, I'm slipping back again. And I was a little disheartened. A little blood later in the afternoon. And I'm saying, oh, geez, and whatnot. But then after that, it felt like that was what it needed to flush out
the blood.
And after that, I never had blood again. Or I might have had blood one more time in the morning, but nothing like that. Then I felt like it was healing. I mean, still now, I still have to figure if, you know, I get sore down there from time to time. I have to figure out now if I'm managing hemorrhoids or, God forbid, a fissure is still there. Yeah. But it's nothing like it was before. I think, you know, what you learn from this whole process is how to manage this. This is something you have to manage now going forward. Even if you feel like you're healed and whatnot, you're going to manage it going forward all the time. I mean, this is something that, you know, if you start eating huge amounts of food and everything and having huge bowel movements and everything, you know, you could rip open again. I don't know. You're going to be careful. Then it became, how do I manage the SIBO? I still have an anal fissure potentially, but it feels like it's healed, thank the Lord, which I did many times. And then I have to manage the SIBO. And so, you know, I didn't take any more of the herbs or anything that I was taking after I took the Xifaxan. You know, I was using Floristar first, then I switched over to Saccharomyces boulardii. It didn't seem to feel like it was working, but I went back to the Floristar. Then I ordered from Jarrow Manufacturers. The company's called Jarrow, and it's a super, you know, with MOS, whatever that is, I don't know. But that really works great for me. I haven't had diarrhea in months. Let me take a step back. A month ago, I started with the diarrhea when I went down the Cape. And then I said to myself, okay, I'm trying to manage the SIBO now. I'm still taking fiber all the time. I stopped the fiber. Because if you do research on SIBO with Kate Scarletta or any other, you're not supposed to take fiber supplements because that feeds the bacteria. Even though it helps with your digestive and keeping your stools softer and everything, which you need to do when you're healing the fissure, it feeds your bacteria, and you got to be careful with that. So I completely, for the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks now, I have stopped the fiber supplements. I still have some stomach issues from time to time, but it's markedly better than it was. So I think that I'm starting to manage the SIBO really well now. I was so thankful that I finally got a diagnosis of what was wrong.
Can you talk a little bit more, though, about that home test for the small intestinal bacterial overgrowth?
Oh, sure.
Some people don't know about it, so about the test in general.
Okay, the test in general, from what I remember, there was a certain diet that I had to follow for like 2 days, I think it was.
It was three. It might be. I can look at the notes and I can...
Okay. I don't remember. I had to follow a special diet. Then you have a bunch of tubes that they give you and a bunch of labels. You had to drink, after you were on the diet for like a certain amount of days, I can't remember the exact amount of days, but which I was sick of doing, you know. Heidi really pushed me to get this on because she wanted a diagnosis too. Because when I was getting the negative test results, which is good. All right, here I am again. This is going to come back negative, and I'm back to square one, but I didn't. So I said, you got to go through with this. So then after a certain amount of days of following a special diet, they give you a solution that you have to drink. Then I think they give you a straw or something, and you blow into a tube, cap it, and then label it time and date. And then every 45 minutes after that, you do it again. Breathe in a tube, roll it, label it, and then you have like 10 tubes or something. You package everything up and you mail in the tubes, and then they determine from gases or something if you have overgrowth bacteria in your small intestine. It wasn't painful or anything. It's just another thing that I had to do.
And plus with the diet, where you were still having issues about eating.
Right.
I remember that came into play.
And then you have to mail it UPS, so it gets there right at priority UPS to the lab afterwards.
Can you talk a little bit more about the colonoscopy?
Well, the colonoscopy, I mean, that was really scary for me because I didn't have a SIBO diagnosis. I still had that terrible fissure pain, and you worry that, you know, do I have cancer? Because, I mean, I'm just diarrhea all the time, blood, and this fissure isn't healing even after surgery. Does that mean I might have cancer, and that's why? Because I remember when my father had his kidney cancer finally go to his brain, his soul wouldn't heal. And I kept saying, is this a sore that will never heal because I have cancer? So that was really what was on my mind. And I was down on myself for not taking a colonoscopy a lot earlier. But I said, all right, well, I got to do it. And I think I'll talk with you. I took a colonoscopy years ago when I was healthy, feeling good and everything. And I remember prepping everything being, you know, solid stools all the way up to the end when you had the diarrhea and you finally knew you were cleaned out. I was having diarrhea from, you know, the whole process. I was afraid, of course, I could have had cancer and whatnot. And having the diarrhea for the whole prep was unnerving for me. I just didn't feel right. So then I went to the colon, and I had that lousy feeling in my stomach. I just felt, I was down to 160 pounds, and that's very light for me.
How much did you lose?
I was at 210 pounds, 212 to 215, right around there, and I went down to 160. Yeah, so I wasn't feeling good and everything. I thought I called the rapid drop in weight. I thought I might have had cancer or something. When you have SIBO, all the nutrients go pass right through you. So anyway, that being said, having the colonoscopy, when I finally woke up after finally having it and everything, I was relieved to hear that I had, you know, I had some polyps removed, you know, they went to the lab, they were precancerous, thank God, you know, you got them all out and everything. And I remember, you know, so I had a glass of apple juice. I went home and walked in the house and all of a sudden I said, oh God, I don't feel right. I went up to the bathroom, had a diarrhea again. And I said to myself, how am I having diarrhea after being cleaned out? So I called Dow back up. Oh, that could you could have had some of that prep solution just still in you and everything, but it just wasn't right. So I knew something was wrong with me. Thankfully, thank God, I finally figured out what it was.
When you were going through this, food became an issue, so you were afraid to eat.
Yes.
And you used to eat anything before.
Right, right.
And now, when you were going through that, talk a little bit more about that food issue and how you were afraid, and then also the courage it took for you to begin eating again.
Yeah. Well, it all started small, and it built up from there. I tried to stay away from high-fiber foods other than taking my fiber. Not necessarily high-fiber foods, but whole wheat, which I'm used to whole wheat and, you know, a lot of roughage and stuff. I tried to cut that back a little. I went to white bread, white rice, all stuff I never had before, and grilled cheese sandwiches on white bread. And, you know, I just had some saltines for snacks, and that's it, white saltines. I tried to stay away from the whole wheat. I was doing it in small increments and everything, and so that was kind of working. And I kept building it up. You know, in the morning, you know, I stopped coffee because I was afraid I was going to have a bowel movement. When I got started drinking, I started with tea, and then I had one cup of coffee. Now I'm back to having two cups of coffee, which I was before this whole ordeal started. But I had to do it slow and build it up because you have to figure out what works and what doesn't. Now, since I've stopped taking the fiber supplements, I've switched back to brown rice, and I'm in the process of switching back to whole wheat bread again. So I'm trying to get my diet back to the way I liked it. Not with junk and stuff, but with what I view as healthier foods, of salads. And like a lot of people, you know, because of Crohn's and ulcerative colitis. And that's really what Dr. Dow thought I had. Because having the fistula with the anal fissure are two warning signs for having ulcerative colitis or Crohn's. So I'm trying to figure out sugar. You have to stay away from simple sugars. And you have to stay away from artificial sweeteners that end with OL. Those are no good for SIBO. So I had to read everything and make sure that I wasn't taking anything that was high in sugar. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything has, you know, a lot of things have sugar in it, but you want to keep it down to a minimum, like fruits and everything. I was eating fruits all the time. I had to cut that way down. Yeah. Okay, I had to look at this, what I sweetened the water with, and make sure it didn't have the OLs or sugar in it. So I switched and I stay on, right now, stevia is my main sweetener. And I still try to stay away from high sugar foods. I mean, that's good for anybody, but that's very important because the simple sugars, you know, like yogurts, I had to cut the yogurts out with, you know, the flavored yogurts, you know, and stuff like that. So I had to cut all that out because simple sugars feed that bacteria.
So you were learning now to read all ingredients.
Yes. I mean, I don't want to eat junk anymore. Occasionally. No, but like if you look at Kate Scarletta's diet and diets for SIBO, having potato chips isn't, it's okay.
It's not the end of the
it's
world.
It's not the end of the world. But I'm not in an overload mode either. I care more about eating too much sugar than fat. Whereas before I was focusing on too much fat and not in the sugar. The sugar's worse than the fat.
you change your whole way of thinking of this.
Right. So it's the sugars you got to stay away from, not the fats. I mean, you want to eat healthy fats, but that being said, and I stopped eating red meat for 2 years. I haven't touched red meat.
And do you miss it?
No, I don't. I don't really miss it. No. I really enjoy chicken, and I enjoy tuna fish. I'll eat swordfish. I don't miss the red meat because it's hard to digest. I cannot afford to go through that again. If I do go through it again, it's not because I screwed up. But if I screwed up and it happened, I'll be so upset with myself.
Yeah.
I really will. The fact that red meat is very hard to digest, it's a very easy decision for me to stay with chicken and fish and swordfish and tuna fish.
The other thing too is once you have GI issues, you think about food differently, and that kind of governs what your diet's going to be.
Right.
And so mentally, sometimes it can be easier to say goodbye to these particular foods because you know the consequence it's going to have.
That's correct. But you'd be amazed when you're feeling better.
You forget.
You can forget easy.
Yep.
See, feeling better is like night and day. But you have to have discipline. When you have GI issues, you have to have discipline.
Definitely.
I mean, this SIBO, it's another thing that nobody even knows about, really. And hardly anyone that is not familiar with GI issues. What's SIBO? What's that? I mean, people with Crohn's and everything, you tell them you have SIBO, they know right away what you have.
Right.
It's awful.
It is.
It really is.
It's debilitating. Yeah. It can be debilitating.
Yeah. Having the SIBO with the anal fissure was just a complete
nightmare.
It was a nightmare. It really was. I have so much compassion for people that are in pain every day now just because of what I went through.
No, it is. It's like I said, it governs everything in your life. And it's excruciating. It affects the brain. It affects the ability to eat. Everything.
You don't want to go out. You don't want to hang around.
Right.
You don't want company.
Get smaller and smaller.
Right.
If you go to the store and you just go into the digestive aids, look at all the products they have. Doesn't that tell you something? There's also stigma to that. You don't want to talk about GI things in public.
It's funny.
You hide it.
It's correct. You do hide it. But you know what's funny is when you're in pain for such a long time, like it was, I just didn't care anymore. I just wanted to get better. I was first shy about the whole procedure. And of course, there's women assistants and a woman surgeon that was observing my surgery because this guy was going to teach her. But anyway, I didn't care. I can honestly see how people come to the wit's end and they say, okay, I can't live like this anymore. And I can see why they want to just end it. I really can. I can certainly see that. And that's where antidepressants are so important. I can honestly understand why somebody every single day, whether it's a digestive, like, you know, my situation, or cancer or whatever, being in pain every single day, you know, you just say to yourself, all right, I got to talk to my family about all the stuff that I have around and, you know, where it is and, you know, this and that, because I don't know if I can do this anymore. Well, that's where medication can change the gateway of the rut that's engraved in your brain, and you slip into the rut right away again. With the medication and a confidant or someone you can speak with, you can start to get that rut to start pulling out, get that rut healed so you don't go right into it again. Without the medication, being able to do it just with therapy and talking is extremely difficult, because you almost like you're conditioned to the point where it's a comfort zone for you.
Exactly.
Even though it's a horrible comfort zone, it's a comfort zone that human behavior naturally goes back to what it's comfortable with.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way we're programmed. And unfortunately, without medication, you know, you can feel great after talking to somebody, but you'll go right back in.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what happens. And when you're depressed like that, it impacts everybody around, all your loved ones.
I remember Heidi was thinking I was going to die because I was like gray colored. I mean, I was down over 40 pounds.
I remember. Tell me a little bit about the internet and how that played. Because I know it was instigating anxiety.
Yes. I completely stopped on the internet after like 2 or 3 weeks after surgery, because then there was another guy on there, anal fissure, who had the surgery, and you know, he was still bleeding a week after the surgery, and he started having diarrhea, and he was all panicking and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have diarrhea, the fissure is not going to heal, pretty much. So many people on that fissure board, the anal fissure, you know, rises to a huge problem for them. I mean, huge.
Right.
Because, you know, it just doesn't heal. So he had to go on anxiety medication and everything, and then he had a C. diff test. for the diarrhea, and then finally the diarrhea subsided and he was all happy again, and mine just kept ramping up. So I had to get away from that. I just would have kept sinking and sinking, and I gotta stop looking at it. I did read one post when I was researching anal fissures, but not on the thread, just doing research on them and everything. One guy said, which is contrary to all the other anal thread messages, is just because you haven't healed after a sphincterotomy, that's what it's called, doesn't mean it didn't help you. You still could heal even a year after. And I saw that and I said, I'm going to hang my hat on that. And then I didn't look again anymore about anal fissures. And then I hung my hat on that. And then I said, I also hung my hat on the fact that even though the surgery didn't heal me and it kind of promoted the SIBO even more and screwed me up, at least I got rid of the fistula. So,
but by this time you were on the in the medication for your mind.
Yes, I was.
Okay, so that's why you could do that.
Right, right.
Because I know a lot of patients, they go online, they read things, and they begin to panic, and it instigates their anxiety.
Yep.
And yet other people, that's why I always say make sure you go to reputable sites. Sometimes on those boards.
Yeah, because someone will put a thread, and a good example is someone put a thread out there that anal fissures can cause cancer, which is completely, completely false.
Right.
And then someone came back and answered him and said, get off this message board. That post is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And another person said, just because some people put it in there, I had my sphincterotomy, I healed right up, it's no problem. And other people wrote back and said, look, everyone's different in the healing process. Mm-hmm. Just because you heal fast doesn't mean everyone else. Don't give people a reason to be down on themselves if they're not healing right away, you know? But I just stopped completely after that because I knew that I was just heading down the wrong path if I kept looking at that. The medication definitely helped that. There's no question.
So you're staying on that med?
I'm going to try to stay on it. I switched from the psychiatrist to my primary care physician who's prescribing them. I'm staying on them the rest of my life because I need them.
When you were getting better then, talk a little bit more about your faith. When did that start to kick in?
You know, I've been supporting Osteen Ministry, you know, over the years. This is going for a while, but I wasn't, you know, I'd watch some of the sermons on TV and I'd donate money and stuff and they'd send me things from here and there. So I was inactively involved, but supporting them. I saw that cube on TV. I says, geez, that would, based on what I'm going through now, I mean, why don't I just buy it? So I bought it and I started to listen to that every day, every morning. I listened to the inspirational message every morning. And then that started me back getting much more serious about my faith. There's something to this. This isn't just psychological. This is something to this. Then I turned up my faith and then, you know, I started feeling a little better and then I started praying. Osteen turns it around and it's more like you ask the Lord for what you want. The Lord wants you to build a bond with him. Ask him what you want. Tell him what you're thankful for. The more you think that way, the more things will happen for you. So I turned it around and I was thanking the Lord for healing me before I was fully healed. I thank the Lord every day for what I want, and it seems to be working fantastic.
Wow, that's wonderful. And that's the power of faith.
Right, right. It's very important.
It's very important.
Because it also helps you with anxiety. It helps you with the way you think. Like I said yesterday out there after that snowstorm and everything, I'm happy as a clam to do it. I remembered a year after I was dealing what I was dealing with. It was January, so it was 2 years ago. I was still hurting. Going out in the driveway with the snowblower, I was still feeling the fissure pain doing it. After going through what you go through, you know what works and what doesn't, and I know that works. Look at Joel Osteen's mother. She had terminal cancer and was given months to live, and 20-something years later.
Amazing.
You know why? Because it's faith and it's hope. Even if faith and hope doesn't come through for you in this life, for whatever reason, you will benefit from it somehow.
You do.
Right.
That helps you mentally to get through it, too,
right,
and you hold on to that hope. That's what I say. When all else fails, you have to hold on to that hope. Did you have guilt? Guilt,
yes,
when you were...
I
remember you talking about that. That's
well,
why
I
brought it up.
I couldn't drive my kids to... You know, Don had his karate, and Nikki had her volleyball stuff and everything, and Mickey didn't have a license then and stuff. I couldn't drive them and everything, so at times I would, you know, have tears in my eyes because I thought I was being a failure as a father, not being able to help them. I'm saying, you know, you're older, these kids are younger, they need your support. I was just like a shell unto myself at that point. And then I had a lot of guilt about not doing what I need to do for my family. So I did have that guilt.
What if you were to say three things that you've learned from going through this?
What I have learned is have compassion for anybody that has digestive issues, because it is debilitating and it's very important to them, and don't brush it off. What else have I learned? I am very thankful for the family that I have, and I'm very thankful for having my health. Health is everything.
Beautifully said. That's so inspiring. If you were to give advice to other people who are suffering now,
what I would do is make sure you find a GI doctor that you're very comfortable with, and as you have always told me, that's imperative. Whether it's GI or colorectal, experience in this area is critical. Mm-hmm. It really is. So that's very, very important. Can't underestimate that. Also, whatever you can do, whether to build your faith, is absolutely critical. It's critical. And if your anxiety is overwhelming, or if you suffer from anxiety, or if your condition is caused you immense anxiety, you've got to address that, because if you don't, the healing process it'll take forever. Your mind can send powerful drugs to your body. It's like a pharmaceutical company, your mind, but it can't do its job if anxiety is blocking it. That would be my advice.
That's excellent. Now, what would you give to the families who are watching this? I know sometimes it's helplessness, sometimes they lose patience.
Yeah.
Because now a lot of the burden goes on to them.
Right.
You can't do it.
Right. Well, I mean, I think I give spouses and family members high marks for taking care of somebody that's going through this. I know at times they probably can feel, like they're fighting an uphill battle. But you got to hang in there. As you said before, and I just said previously, if you know you have a good GI doctor, then there's always hope. If you know you have a good GI doctor, you know that you can manage the mental health of the person in your family who's struggling. As long as there's faith, there's hope. And without hope, nothing can happen.
I think another thing that I would like to add is never doubt yourself. You knew something was wrong.
Yeah.
Once you went to that surgeon, you knew something was still wrong.
Right, right.
And instead of just accepting that, that's again the perseverance.
Right. That's an excellent point. Don't doubt yourself.
Yeah.
I've doubted myself throughout my life in my earlier years, which mm-hmm. caused me nothing but pain. I do not doubt myself anymore. If I believe in something, I stick with it. Unless I'm proven otherwise, but I don't doubt myself anymore. Because doubting yourself is doubting the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And if you doubt yourself, you're doubting the Lord. The Lord made you in His image. You don't doubt yourself, because if you doubt yourself, you'll go nowhere. That's very important. I'm glad you brought that up. I just hope, in summary to all this, but with the last question and everything, if this interview can help just one person, then I know I've been successful. All I need is one person that can help. That's it.
Well, I'm sure it's going to help more than one person. Sometimes you go through these things. I always say that God has you go through it, not only for changes in yourself, but to touch other people's lives by your experiences.
Yep.
And you exemplify that.